Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. I'm Henry Rhys Sheridan, standing in this week for Josh Fennett. On today's show, we bring you the second part of our Oslo Design Survey, this time focusing on the Oslo Architecture Triennale 2016, which began on September the 8th and runs until November the 27th. First up,
we are trying to respond to two main questions. One is, how does architecture intervene in our relationship with the territories and communities where we belong?
We talked to the curators of the show about its guiding concept, After Belonging. Next, we talked to the Triennale's director, Hannah Densick-Petersen, about the event's development and why it matters that it's happening in Oslo. And finally, from the Triennale,
the kind of framework of the Triennale as a kind of framework or a platform by which new ideas can be discussed and appropriated and models can be distributed around the world, is at risk.
ARC Daily editor-at-large and Monocle 24 regular James Taylor Foster joins me to give his angle on the show. Plus, we take a break from Oslo to check out some hospitality design in Singapore.
Increasingly, there's so many examples of great, original, distinctive concepts that have been created here.
All that coming up right here on Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. This year's Oslo Architecture Triennale is one of the most hotly anticipated events in the architecture and design calendar. Much of the excitement centres around the curatorial team, a group of young Spanish architects, all with some connection to Columbia University's Graduate School of Architecture, Planning and Preservation, or GSAP. Known as the After Belonging Agency, the title they've given the Triennale is After Belonging, a Triennale in residence, on residence, and the ways we stay in transit. A spate of events across the city includes two exhibitions, one called In Residence and one called On Residence, a conference involving presentations from some of the brightest minds in architecture, and an events programme running until the end of November. I met up with two of the curatorial team in Oslo's redeveloped harbour area to ask them about the concept behind the show and how it's grounded in Oslo.
I'm Alejandra Navarrete.
And my name is Ignacio González Galán.
We are like a group of like five architects, curators and scholars. Our names are like Carlos Mínguez Carrasco, Marina Otero Bercier, Luis Alexander Casanovas Blanco, Ignacio González Galán and Alejandra Navarrete Llopis. And we came together for the first time to do this project, to prepare the competition for the Oslo Architecture Triennale around questions of like identity, circulation and mobility. And like some of us were like interested on those topics. So that's why we came together to do this competition.
I think that we are trying to respond to two main questions. One is, how does architecture intervene in our relationship with the territories and communities where we belong? And also, the second one would be, how do we relate to the objects we own, share and exchange in a moment that is characterized by global movement of people, information and goods in a global context?
From your perspective, were you excited to work for this event in particular? If so, why? And has executing the Triennale, lived up to your expectations?
We were like super excited because we think like this Triennale that opens a competition 2 years before it starts is not like other Biennales and Triennales don't do the same. So it was like important for us to have like this long period of time to do research. So we were like really interested, particularly in this one, you know. And it's also for us was important that is they select the curators through like an open call. So that was also important, you know, so they don't point the curator through, you know, a selection of committee, but it's like an open call for everybody, no? So it was important for us. And as well, like the last edition that was done by Rotor, we were like really intrigued by it. The publication, we didn't come, we were not lucky to come, but it was like kind of like a very important event on the architectural discipline. So we were really like looking forward.
And you were asking about the process and if it had fulfilled our ambitions. I think that these 2 years had allowed us to very much ground some ideas that we had about the topic we wanted to develop in the local context in Oslo and realize how the pressing questions we were addressing are relevant to the transformations that Oslo is undergoing with newcomers as migrants and also asylum seekers, but also with transformations in the real estate of the city. So to be able to ground our project in the local reality was important. And also we did that through research, but also through intense work with local institutions like the Association of Norwegian Architects, the National Museum, Design and Architecture Center. So that opportunity, and the architecture school, that opportunity of working with local institutions has been key throughout this process to fulfill our ambitions, yes.
You've preempted my next question, which was going to be exactly, you know, on the one hand, the theme of this exhibition looks truly globally, and it indeed concerns itself with dynamics and realities which are intrinsically transnational and to do with crossing national borders. On the other hand, everything has to happen in a very particular place, which is Oslo. And you mentioned that you've worked very collaboratively with institutions in the city to realise that. How have you found working with these institutions to be? Has it been generally cooperative? Have they understood what you're trying to do? Have they helped you in what you're trying to do? Has there been any confusion or any frustrations?
I think like they were like super cooperative since the very beginning. Like the six institutions that Nacho was like mentioning before really were like very engaged with the conversations with us since the very beginning. And in fact, what you were saying before, that this is like a global topic, but we really wanted to, you know, like select particular questions about it. We selected 10 sites a year ago, and one of them is in Torshov, and they were like really eager to participate in the Triennale, in the conversations, and they opened, you know, their doors for us. We had like a meeting with them a year ago, one and a half years ago, and they were like really looking forward to collaborate with us. And we launched a competition for like these 10 sites, and two of the intervention strategies were like happening there. So they like organized a series of workshops with them, and with also like Makers Hub, like, and other institutions, and we UDA as well participated. So I think it has been like really like they were like really engaged with the topic and the way we were like trying to discuss particular topics in Oslo.
Yeah, I mean, there are many ways in which those global realities that you were appealing are very present in Oslo. Like Torshov, that Alejandra was mentioning, is an asylum seeker center where big numbers of refugees, like in other parts of Europe, are arriving to Oslo, and they are temporarily hosted there while they are processing their visa applications. But there are many other ways in which Oslo is connected with other places in the world, and it's part of those global realities that we are trying to address. Not far from here, in the neighborhood of Grönland, you have what is called Little Karachi, with all the Pakistani migration that has come to Oslo. And in Pakistan, you have what is called Little Oslo. So those realities that are linked through affections, but also through remittances that transform in new architectures both here and there, are the ones that we are trying to address, to imagine or to suggest that Oslo is not confined in the neighborhoods that are here, but is present in other parts of the world, is one of the contentions that we are proposing.
That was Alejandra Navarrete Lopez and Ignacio Galan from the After Belonging Agency, two of the curators of this year's Oslo Architecture Triennale. So that's the curator's perspective on this year's show, but I wanted to learn more about the history of the Triennale itself, so I spoke to the Triennale's director, Hannah Densick-Petersen. She explained the history of the event to me and how its trajectory is both a symptom and a cause of Oslo's development as a design city.
The Triennale, like you said, started in 2000, and it was an initiative from the Norwegian Association of Architects that tried to broaden the way they discuss things. And what they did in 2000 is that they invited around 10 international offices to look at Oslo and really housing development, and ask the question, how do we implement 100,000 new dwellings in Oslo? It's kind of controversial thing, and it's a big growth. And they got I guess, unexpected and interesting answers from people outside of Oslo that started debates and discussions that maybe hadn't been discussed before. Since then, it's been a kind of a local event with the Norwegian curators discussing maybe Norwegian issues with Norwegian architects. But in 2009, six of the important big architectural and city planning institutions came together and decided that we want to try to develop this to a different level. So the OIT was shaped into a members institution. So the members are the National Museum of Architecture, the Norwegian Center for Design and Architecture, the Oslo School of Architecture and Design, something called Oslo Business Region, which is kind of the branding alliance for the municipality, and it's the Oslo Association of Architects and the Norwegian Association of Architects. And what one did was to shape a secretariat and give it a permanent kind of location. And one also decided to do an international call for the coming Triennale, which was in 2013. And this really opened up. So we managed to kind of reach an international audience with the 2013 Triennale, which was behind the green door, curated by Rotor, and gave us a momentum that we kind of pushed forward. And actually, I talked about it briefly yesterday when we had a beautiful reception at the City Hall here celebrating the opening, that the first year the Triennale actually didn't close down after a Triennale was in 2014. So we're so young, like it's almost hard to believe how exponential the growth has been. But from 2014, we were able to work continuously after a Triennale, and the momentum from the 2013 Triennale has helped us kind of push even further out. And being to realize this event here today and seeing that we're being able to actually reach out globally, but also at the same time have local relevance with these six institutions that are our backbone in a way, and brings us back home and always reminding us of what's important here in terms of global issues.
Does it make sense to say any more, though, considering the scope of this year's Triennale, that you're still a Norwegian organisation, that you're still an organisation that is rooted intrinsically to Oslo? Or could this happen anywhere now, I wonder? Does it matter anymore that you're based in Oslo? And if it matters, how does it matter?
So the theme, like you say, is a global theme. It's about migration. It's about belonging. It's also a theme that I think could touch everyone. It's a very wide way of looking at what architecture is. It goes way beyond the building. It talks about circulation of people and things and information. And yeah, I think that's one of the really big important parts of the success here now is, of course, the curatorial concept. But I also think the success has two sides, and I think we're having a kind of a success on the topic, which is kind of really embraced by a lot of people. But at the same time, we're having a success as an institution with this Triennale. To answer your kind of question about Oslo and Norway, and I think yes, it's definitely something really close connected to Norway and to Oslo. And of course, the Triennale could happen anywhere. We see that it does happen everywhere in more places, actually. And maybe also because maybe it happens more and more places because it is important to the local situation. It does something for that place where it happens. It's important here at home because Norway and Oslo is what brings the Triennale out to the world. It comes from here. It starts here, and it's dependent on all the agents and stakeholders here. I think that meeting also between the international and the curatorial team this time and Oslo and what's happening here has also been driving the content of the Triennale to another level where it wouldn't be if it was only an international or only a local event.
Hanna Densick-Petersen there, director of Oslo Architecture Triennale. Still to come on the show, we take a break from Oslo to hail a high watermark of hospitality design in Southeast Asia, and we finish our coverage of Oslo Architecture Triennale by speaking to Arc Daily editor-at-large James Taylor Foster.
What is culture with Robert Bound?
This is the show of shows.
There was something really magical about it.
Everybody's boozing, having grand adulterous love affairs. There's fabulous fistfights. And everybody is smoking opium.
How did that get in there?
Well, when we're not enjoying the after party, we're on an intrepid investigation each week to answer questions like how do you adapt a novel and how do you start an art collection? Culture with Robert Bound is your one-stop shop for the answers to the cultural questions that leave you scratching your head every day. Grab a drink, pull up a chair, and tune in every Monday at 1900 London time.
Stay one step ahead of the breaking news.
Refugees are entering the European Union and, for that matter, the Schengen area at Greece. And nothing is being done either by Greece or by the European Union as a whole.
Hear industry-leading insights from our experts.
The way Apple Pay works is that it uses the same technology that a contactless credit card, but that only works with a contactless card reader.
And catch up with Monocle's bureau around the world.
Being Japan, they're very confident that there will be a stadium by spring 2020, even though at the moment there's no design and no architect. So I don't know, fingers crossed at this point.
Every weekday at noon London time, keep your appointment with The Briefing on Monocle 24.
Time now to head to Singapore to speak to a leader in the world of hospitality design over there. Lo and behold, the talented souls behind Odette and the White Rabbit restaurants, among others, has rented three arches beneath its leafy headquarters on Beach Road, in which to launch three smart shops. Luxie Luxie offers free teas from Amuse Projects alongside a smattering of design-minded books to browse. Supermama specialises in homeware, and near neighbour Seen Shang turned out excellent wooden furniture. Monocle's Josh Fennett caught up with group co-founder and director Wee Teng Wen. They spoke about Lo and Behold burgeoning restaurant portfolio and how to keep design consistent across premises, retail spaces and the brand's soon-to-open first hotel.
So the Lo and Behold group was started 11 years ago. We started with a rooftop bar called Loof. Since then, we've been very fortunate to be able to add to the cultural landscape of Singapore and grown with the country. We now have a portfolio of 11 venues across Singapore, and they range from a beach club on Singapore's best strip of sand to an abandoned church that we converted into a restaurant to an Art Deco-style bistro and bar. And the list goes on. We've always applied a lot of passion into each project, so in many ways they are labours of many people's love.
And people can probably hear behind us a bit of a hubbub because you're hosting a party this evening. That's fine, don't look around like it's a problem. But one thing that goes through all of your projects is a certain attention to detail when it comes to design. I wonder how you go about designing new spaces that pay homage to the different buildings and the different spaces, but also keep a little bit of the group's identity in everyone. How do you go about kind of navigating the design of spaces and bringing them to life?
We've been very fortunate that, as you mentioned, to have come across and secured a range of very beautiful spaces to begin with. And I think the consistency that we apply is really the rigor by which we approach the space and think, distill the concept, and then think about the individual touch points that really add the magic thereafter. I think it's that almost think tank-like approach to each project and to each brand that really helps to set the venues apart.
So when you talk about a think tank, you're presumably talking about there's an architect involved. Is it the same architect every time? There's a chef involved. Is there someone in charge of every menu over every place? Or is it about letting individuality flourish? Where do you kind of land on that?
It does fluctuate from project to project, but we have been very fortunate to have built up a core team, a core in-house team. So we actually run both marketing, concept development, as well as design in-house. And that really allows us to have built up a very strong collaboration, a working style over the years. We also have worked with interior designers, architects, and built up strong relationships and comfortable relationships over the years.
And Singapore is such an amazing melting pot society of different ethnicities, people coming over and being in charge at different times. There's also a great range of food. Changi Airport's an amazing transport hub, so you get people crossing over from all parts of the world, expats settling here. How do you decide on what concept is going to work and what people are going to want next, what people are going to continue to find popular when you launch a new restaurant?
We've always followed our heart, so I think it's been more of an emotive process than a rational one. and it's typically a location or a concept that speaks to us. I think over time there's been a gut feel that's been honed to some extent. I think not just about the work that we've been doing, but the overall scene in Singapore. What's been really refreshing is that I think a few years ago it was still a very much a referencing the West kind of approach, or referencing the rest of the world in terms of taking what has worked there and applying it carte blanche here. But increasingly there's so many examples of great, original, distinctive concepts that have been created here in this part of the world.
So you mentioned that idea that there's a bit of a coming of age of a truly Singaporean identity. Is this something that you'd consider in future taking beyond Singapore, or are you limited to what's going on in Singapore at the minute in your kind of sights?
At the moment, the places and the spaces that speak to us have been here in Singapore, and we've had a lot of fun in creating them. But yeah, increasingly, we will be looking abroad to further this Singapore brand and our approach towards hospitality.
And I've heard a rumour, I don't know whether I should necessarily air it here, but what kind of projects do you guys have on the horizon? What are the things that you're looking forward to? And what can we expect from the group in the coming year or years?
We're in the midst of opening a boutique hotel. So that opens in December this year, January next year. We've inherited a fantastic site which sits on the banks of the Singapore River. So it's in what used to be a godown, and godowns are pre-war buildings that were built to house spices, vices and spices, and the opium trade. So this building in particular was built in the 19th century, and we are converting it into a 37-room boutique hotel.
Wee Teng Wen, co-founder and director of Lo & Behold, speaking there to Monocle's Josh Fennett. Finally on the show, we return to Oslo to get a journalist's perspective on the Triennale. James Taylor Foster is European Editor-at-Large for architecture website Arc Daily. I caught up with him after his tour of the On Residence exhibition at the Norwegian Centre for Design and Architecture, or DOGA. We spoke about why this event in particular and Oslo as a city matter. I would imagine, from what I know of your schedule this year, that you're at risk of bee and tree annale fatigue. Is that a reasonable assumption, number one? Number two, if you have it, has this event exacerbated your condition or relieved it?
Well, we've spoken about this before. There's a phenomenal amount of architectural and design biennales and triennales taking place this year, from Venice to Istanbul to Lisbon and to here in Oslo. And yes, it does get a bit exacerbating. And the reason why is because every single event is attempting to promote discourse, right? And this one in particular is triennale. The difference, obviously, between a triennale and a biennale is that there's more time to construct the actual exhibition. There's more time for research. And the actual amount of research and the quality of the research behind After Belonging here in Oslo is quite insane, actually. And so you do start to wonder how far you as an individual can sort of absorb all this when there's so many competing ideas taking place around the world at the moment. But at the same time, it's extremely valuable.
I know you've been excited about this event in particular for a while, and I don't want to get bogged down too much in deep, deep analysis of the themes at hand. But why did this event in particular excite you? What distinguishes it from the other architectural events, biennales and triennales, that have been going on in terms of its subject matter and the way it approached that subject matter, its line of inquiry?
Five curators were selected from an open call. These five curators are all Spanish. They all live in New York. They don't speak Norwegian. And they've decided to discuss a topic on after belonging, understanding what belonging means today and what our belongings mean today. This is super interesting because what we've noticed in recent biennales and triennales of the like is that borders seem to be dissolving, especially in discourse. Usually the way in which you construct these events is through national borders. But in this instance, we see this completely dissolved and really, truly globally important, globally influential ideas are being discussed comprehensively and with kind of wide-reaching effects that are real world. So normally when you go to a Biennale, you're looking at a representation of something. But here, there's a wonderful series of intervention strategies, real strategies to engage with issues relating to migration, issues related to the sharing economy, which are taking place in places like Copenhagen, taking place all around the world. This is interesting because it's grounded.
And how successfully do you think it's been executed, not only on a curatorial level, but also, you must now have gained insight into how the institutional infrastructure, all of the different stakeholders who are invested in these events, how their performance affects the outcome of the event. How well has this event been organized, been executed? How well has the governmental bodies and the other design and arts organizations in Oslo who have been involved facilitated the event?
I mean, there's always a great deal of different agents involved in realizing these things because they are fundamentally difficult, bureaucratic things to kind of produce. You're essentially trying to bring together a number of disparate organizations that might not normally work together. And the beautiful thing is that here in Oslo and in the wider Nordic region, it seems to have actually taken place and quite successfully. The beautiful thing about working in somewhere like Norway is that the government still has a massive stake in how these things are funded. There is, of course, private funding in the mix, but at the end of the day, when something is governmentally funded by its majority, you've got a lot more freedom in terms of curatorial strategy and editorial approach. Ultimately, you know, this amount of public funding may be dissolving, and I think that's something which you are beginning to see in even the Nordic region. The question is, how does the Triennale kind of move forward from this? Because with the risk of losing your kind of independence with these things, you start to, the kind of framework of the Triennale as a kind of discourse condenser or a kind of framework or a platform by which new ideas can be discussed and appropriated and models can be distributed around the world, is at risk. So, I don't know, I think they've done a very, very good job here, but maybe a little bit unsettled about the future.
ARC Daily Editor-at-Large James Taylor Foster there, speaking to me at the Norwegian Centre for Design and Architecture. That's it for this week's show. Thanks to our editors Holly Fisher and Alex Funnell. If you have any comments or queries, then feel free to email me at hrs@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next week at the same time. You can always listen again or dip into our back catalogue at monocle.com, SoundCloud and iTunes. And please leave us a review on iTunes if you get a chance. It really helps people find the show. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan, and until next time, it's goodbye from me.